Maximilian II always smiled, and that was a problem. This might have been acceptable for a child of his social standing in society, but his whistling, not. Of all the odd behaviors boys sometimes exhibit, that whistling, and in the most inappropriate of times, it shocked his noble parents. His mother gasped, and she had to retire to her bed for a rest, because she had a delicate nervous condition. His father frowned, and he gave his son and heir the "so disappointed in you" look, and then he abruptly left. Maximilian II had no idea why he upset his parents. He was just whisked away to the West Wing. The smiling and the whistling started at an age so young that his pediatrician and a child psychologist tested the boy for every possible syndrome. Both of them declared the child normal, intelligent, and happy. Now, in British families with old money, titles, and mansions and estates, happy as a diagnosis was the most impossible answer. Lady Elizabeth and Sir Borodleon both believed that the boy would grow out of this distressing habit, and until then, they banished him to his quarters, the faraway West Wing, and Maximilian II didn't even notice. To tell the truth, at 6, it was rather delightful not to attend those family gatherings. His was a family of many rules about good manners and dressing up in a certain way for every occasion. In British families, certain etiquette stood steadfast. Grandfather and his father's father, all who had lived in this same manor, in the same grand house, were heirs to titles with enough blue blood to have them attend royal weddings. But their importance as members of clubs and gatherings came simply because they were billionaires in banking for generations. Money talked. Maximilian II would follow in his father's footsteps, of course. Sons from fortune families with titles and connections and, of course, that just enough blue blood. Sons did what sons did, follow in father's footsteps always. In time, hopefully sooner than later, the smiles and the whistling would wash off. This lad was young yet, so for the time being, off to the West Wing with him, with the acceptable social excuse of him being a sickly child. And everybody always spoke about his terribly difficult birth. Everybody knew about that. Horrid affair, really. But oh, did it ever make excellent gossip. The child was born on Christmas Day before breakfast. A terrible time for Lady Elizabeth, who had to have an emergency cesarean section. Oh, on Christmas Day. It was her day to shine. To be pitied and pampered and envied by all the rich and famous and glamorous and important people of her oh-so-posh and snobby social network. She grew up more important than her husband, with older money, more family titles, and a massive income. They're both married for position and to connect to already overly aristocratic families. It was a very successful arrangement. He, Maximilian I, lived in the North Wing and she, Lady Elizabeth, in the South, each in their own little kingdom of sorts, surrounded by butlers, doormen, ladies-in-waiting, and of course all the bells and whistles that came with that. And the bells and whistles in the West Wing? Well, all of that was left in the capable hands of a governess, a tutor, a doctor, dietitians, and Nanny Annie. Nanny Annie arrived in Maximilian's life the day after Christmas when he got banished to the West Wing baby room after that dreadful, all of it went wrong, birth. The little boy, Maximilian II, had an easy birth. He got delivered to a pediatrician who whisked him away, out of the sight of mother, who did not even glance in the direction of her son. She raved and ranted about the terrible timing and the awful hospital. Yes, it was posh and pretty and popular, and of course only for high society. But it was so dreadfully public. She almost lost her composure and insisted on going home the very next day. Lady Elizabeth saw her son for the first time on day 5 of his life. She didn't want to see him, but the media insisted on that family portrait. So they all pampered her for a day, and by late afternoon, father, mother, and son posed for that portrait in outfits carefully planned for this joyous occasion. The photos were lovely, really. Everybody said that. They said that Lady Elizabeth looked radiant, lovingly holding her son and the heir to the Baratheon fortune. This was also the first time Maximilian II's father saw him, but it was an event of no importance. It was just a bothersome necessity for the event of first family photo of the famous. After the family photo, back to the West Wing. There Nanny Annie raised the important little boy. She sang him to sleep, kissed him good morning, carried him on her hip, and loved him to bits. She made him laugh, saw his first teeth, his crawling, his first steps. She was part of all those little things babies do. None of these events mattered to his parents in wings north and south. They simply could not be bothered. Nanny Annie perfectly presented the child to his parents at carefully planned times of convenience. After that dreadful mistake the boy made by arriving at that dreadful time on the wrong day, no such behavior would ever be tolerated again. All went according to plan. Highly successful parties in that gorgeous manor house continued to be the talk of the town, the media, and the grateful staff who wanted more than anything to keep their prestigious jobs. There was a small incident, rather upsetting, on Maximilian II's 5th birthday. He said, "Mother, may I bring Bobbly to my party?" He said this ever so politely, for Nanny Annie trained him for talks with Mother. "Bobbly?" Lady Elizabeth frowned. "What? My brother. What an odd thing to say," Lady Elizabeth said. "You don't have a brother, Maximilian. Now off you go."
"I do, I do, I do. I have Bobbly. We play every day."
Whoops. All Nanny Annie's training gone. Maximilian II had a tantrum and tears. So utterly inappropriate. Mother immediately cancelled that 5th birthday party because of sudden illness of child, and she called the best child psychiatrist to see her son. "Normal," the distinguished physician said. "Only children often have a tendency to invent a secret friend, an invisible companion. This will pass." Nanny Annie made the invisible friend vanish, and Dr. D, the most important child behavior doctor, took all the credit. He charged a preposterous fee for healing the child of a brother called Bobbly. Now, the after effect of this event is critically important. This is when Maximilian II started smiling and whistling. Now, about the child's disturbing smile. There was a reason why his parents worried. Normal smiles of well-bred children were reserved and polite. Not this child's. His smile said, "I have a wonderful secret. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you all about it. You'll be delighted." His smile played around his lips, sparkled from his eyes, and it never stopped. The truth is that the entire child sparkled, but Nanny Annie trained him to never, ever, ever show this outside of the West Wing, because Dr. D would return with weeks of testing and reporting to Mother. Maximilian II learned fast. He addressed his mother as Mother, and she called him My Darling, as her mother had called her, without feeling. Maximilian II called his father Sir, and He called his son my boy, as his father had called him and his father's father had called them. Maximilian I ignored the child most of the time simply because he had no value yet. A waste of time, children that young. But he gave his son a brilliant private education in the West Wing. Teachers and tutors arrived daily to educate the young man in the schoolroom. It was just a matter of time. The ages birth to 20 needed to pass. We returned to the West Wing and the untimely birth of this child. From day one at home at 9:07 a.m., Nanny Annie ran a tight ship. What happened in the West Wing stayed in the West Wing. She did this in the most logical of ways. All the immediate staff were family members of hers. Three sisters, two brothers, her father and her mother. Did anybody know about this? No. That was the advantage of being servants, or, if you choose to say so, paid staff. Everybody had a first name and a work title, like Butler James, Doorman Danny, Cook Betty, Roommate Molly and so on. Now, in a country with a government, this would be called nepotism. Nanny Annie implemented this simply because it made common sense. The West Wing had certain secrets, and she had to keep them. She was the fourth child of eight. Both her parents were born on the property, and they were simply part of a staff of 60 members. Nanny Annie loved living on the property. She was born and raised in the servants' quarters by loving parents who quickly taught her to understand her place in life. Her place was to be in the shadows of the West Wing where miracles happen, like her education. Sir Berard Leon's tutors, those who had retired, brilliantly educated Nanny Annie's siblings and then her four daughters. Yes, Nanny Annie had other children. She married for love. She married the chauffeur and they had four bonny girls by the time that she was 28. And then she got lucky with child number five. Really lucky. She fell pregnant exactly at the same time as Lady Elizabeth. And then she got even luckier. She gave birth to a boy exactly the week before Christmas. And then one more piece of fantastic luck. Because luck and good things come in threes. She became the baby's wet nurse. Simply for the reason that the hand-picked wet nurse to take care of Maximilian II? Oh, she fell in love with a carpenter who worked to decorate that baby room, and she dumped her husband, her third child, and the West Wing the day before Christmas. Nanny Johnson ran away. Nanny Annie stepped in. She was the obvious choice, known to the family, and she would do until a replacement could be found. But she stayed, simply because the baby thrived. Then also because so many good rumors about her reached the eyes of Maximilian's parents. Yes, these rumors came from the family and the friends, but the rumors were true. Nanny Annie was simply the best. She loved the little rich boy and brought him up in the way she did her other five. The four girls and the new baby boy, that one born a week before Maximilian. She named her own son Robert. Darling little thing, a boy. Finally, after four girls, a boy. Little Robert was quickly named Bobby, and his name was mispronounced by Maximilian II as Bobbly. Truth? No invisible friend, no syndrome, Maximilian II had a brother Bobbly. Not biological, of course, but the two boys grew up as brothers in that West Wing with Nanny Annie. This grand house, this mansion, was so big that the squeals and laughter and playing of the two boys never even reached the ears of the inside of that house. Mother and father simply did not know. Of course, Nanny Annie's family knew and they loved the idea. She was born as Anne Smith in a loving family. She was born average, of average height, face shape, manner of speech, with brown hair and brown eyes and average intelligence. She was adored by everybody. They were a happy bunch. and she had ambition and exceptional people skills. Anne Smith could spot a lying cheat a mile away. She could smell fake and false intentions. She adored children, and she was a fantastic mother. Her good family name, Smith, secured her a good job for life. Lady Elizabeth's name was Elizabeth Jane Stewart. She was born the daughter of a baron. She too was born average, of average height, face shape, manner of speech, with brown hair and brown eyes, of average intelligence. She had no ambition whatsoever, loathed children, and people skills. She handled herself well in society. Her family name secured a good and well-suited marriage for life. Her job was to produce children. She agreed to one son. Once accomplished, she dumped that child in the West Wing with Nanny Annie. Nanny Annie smiled all the time. Two boys, both of them whistled, just like their grandpapa Smith. He taught both the boys. Maximilian II moved into the family Smith as if he were one of their own. He played with Anne's five children and the cousins and with grandmama and grandpapa. He never told any of this in the grand house, as everybody now called the Manor Bourradleon. Maximilian simply got presented at times in the house for show. Now, on these occasions, his smile was still a very big problem. His whistling was an embarrassment. Oh, he did try to behave, but whistles bubbled from his place of inner joy. That inner joy the family Smith fed him. They gave him truckloads of joy, laughter, storytelling, jokes, playfulness, singing, running, and freedom. Freedom of speech and freedom of manner. The Smith home hummed with love. In the Bourradleon manor, ice-cold silence hung as a thick cloud, a dark, stifling cloud of age-old British proper manners, fake politeness. Whistling for Maximilian II killed this, as did his constant smile. It made him feel better while he had to endure mother and father. His smile still said, "I have a secret. I'll tell you. You're going to be delighted by the news." Years and years passed. Maximilian II went to a posh private school and obtained his degree in business from the university his father and grandfather attended. Bobby attended a public school, regular university, and also got that degree in business. He changed his name to Robert at 16. Maximilian II suggested this. Finally, at the age of 22, Maximilian II finally attended the first board meetings of the company. His job was to keep his mouth shut. He did, and he did not whistle. His smile, dash it! That smile stayed, and that was still a problem. Not that anybody said anything, my goodness, no. They were all too proper. The young man's smile just unnerved them a little bit. At the same time, at 22, Robert got a good job at the local bank. He was the first of his family to make it out of the service of the grand house. He loved his job, bought a house close to his grandparents, and stayed. At 22, Maximilian II had to attend social gatherings at home. He did this splendidly, and it pleased mother. Here his winning smile finally worked. Oh, that secret of smile! It charmed the most suitable young woman from such terrific heritage. And he also clinched a few business deals. His banking and business abilities were very average. His people skills? Oh, he could spot a lying cheat a mile away. he could smell fake and false intentions. Exactly the way his mother could. Nanny Annie. Yes, of course, Nanny Annie was his real mother. Yes, Nanny Annie switched the babies at birth. Maximilian II was hers. Anne's. Robert actually belonged to Lady Elizabeth. Now comes the question, why? Well, there are two groups of people in our story, the haves and the have-nots. The haves are the heirs to riches and titles and contracts and old money and grand houses, and they never really notice the have-nots or the servants. They don't know about the nannies and the doormen and the butlers and the cleaners and the cooks. These people are really part of the furniture. On the other side, the have-nots, Nanny Annie's family, they serve. They observe the people born into the easy life. They peek through windows and marvel at evening gowns and glitz and glamour and, oh, this is only human, they wish to be that princess dancing in that gown. They want to wear that dress. They want to be rich. We all do, really. We want to be more than average. So this desire takes us back to Christmas Day and the day thereafter. Little Bobby and little Max were so similar. No hair and average baby faces. They had average height. They would both have brown hair and brown eyes. That ran genetically in both families. So without really thinking, Nanny Annie switched her only son into the family with titles and billionaires in banking, seamlessly. It worked because of Lady Elizabeth's terrible birth on Christmas Day, that sudden move back home, and the dumping of the baby in the West Wing. Nobody really saw the child. By day 5, Lady Elizabeth insisted on that family portrait, and it had little Robert in it. That gave little Robert a birth certificate and a passport into becoming Maximilian II. Those photos on magazine front pages? Done. The switch was complete. Everybody saw that baby. From then on, Nanny Annie insisted calling the boy by his full, long name. Always. Never little Max. She was average everything, but we know that she was ambitious. Now, what about poor Bobby, the real little Max? Well, he took after Lady Elizabeth, and he was average. But unlike his biological mother, who grew up without love, he got love from the Smith family, and he thrived. He never knew about the switch into normal. And he also never knew about being switched into being part of the working class. He married for love, and he had 5 children. And Maximilian II, Nanny Annie's little Bobby? Oh, he knew. At 6, his adopted grandpapa Smith explained Maximilian's social standing in his family, his future, his place in that grand fortune, his responsibilities, his advantages of being the son of that grand house. Wait, so did grandpapa Smith tell the boy that he was not the real little Max? No, no, no. He simply explained to the boy that he was the child of that grand house and what it stood for. It was this splendid idea that made Maximilian II smile at 6 and whistle, just like Grandpapa Smith. At 16, Nanny Annie told him the truth. Why at 16? Oh, at that age, as teenagers, it's the time for secrets. At that important age, teenagers lie. Oh, and they form lifelong alliances. In this case, mother and son made a pact. They never told. Of course, Grandpapa Smith knew, because his daughter, Nanny Annie, had to confess what she had done with the real heir of the billionaires of banking. Oh, the moral dilemma, the ethical question, the conscience. On day 5, she needed to confess a wrongdoing. She told her father. Grandpapa Smith smiled, and then he whistled. Then he said, "That's a bit of a pickle, my love, but nothing we can do about that now. You'll lose your job. They'll kick all of us out. So better keep this between the two of us. Oh, and do bring my real grandson home, I have to teach the boy to whistle, because life in that grand house can become very boring and cold. Maximilian II took charge of the family business at 35. He hired his brother Robert Smith, not because of pity. Robert got hired because he had skill. Robert instinctively knew how to handle the old gentlemen and ladies, the oh so properly English hoity-toity snobby lords and ladies. Genetics. Robert was proper by good breeding. Simply a natural, and that served the business well. At 36, Maximilian II finally married for love. His parents retired to their summer cottage. The mood in the grand house changed. Nanny Annie and her family attended private parties in that big ballroom. So all ends well? Almost. Everything would have been perfect if not for Peter Thompson. Peter? Peter who? Peter Thompson, Nanny Annie's husband. Little Robert's daddy. The man Nanny Annie married for love. He, just an ordinary man, had four bonny daughters, but he longed and wished and hoped for a boy, a son, his son. A little boy who would call him daddy. Peter knew from day two, when somebody dumped little Max in his arms, that the babies were switched. Did he tell? Of course not. Why? Because in the working class, they also have their codes and their manners and their way of being proper. And in Peter's case, it was fear. Fear of his Anne losing her job, and then of them all losing their jobs. On day five, when the family portrait of his son was published, Peter knew that he had lost his son. He buried his sadness. He missed his boy. He raised the wrong boy, and he did love little Max, well, a little bit. But as the chauffeur, he lived for those stolen few hours when he drove his real son to school and to university and then afterwards to his job. So we have to ask, did Maximilian II know about Peter? Of course he did. He adored his father. So again, does all end well? No, disaster, Peter. After a while, he blackmailed Sir Maximilian I. Why? It's very normal, really. It's just another average man wanting more. Peter wanted more. His son got everything, a fairy tale ending. Nanny Annie thrived. She was thrilled by her son's success. He, Peter, was still just the invisible chauffeur. He wanted more. So, blackmail. For money. Lots. Now, why did Sir Berard Leon agree? Why not tell the truth? Why not switch back? Why not claim your own biological son? Simply, in British high society, the fear of scandal. Scandal ruined families. Scandal was bad for business. And to be very honest, the fake Maximilian II did a splendid job. So they all kept the secret. But by 36, Maximilian II had lost that secret smile and that cheerful whistle. The responsibilities of being a billionaire in banking, with a title, with fame and fortune and that grand house, all of that, that simply suffocated and devoured his smile. Maximilian II stopped smiling, and that was a problem, because nobody noticed. Oh wait, Peter Thompson did, and his heart wept for his only son. There is a tiny silver lining, though. For the rest of Peter's life, he drove his son in a fancy car, and when they were alone, in that place where nobody could see them, there Maximilian smiled. There was freedom and happiness in that car. And yes, of course, father and son spend the time together whistling.